Welcome to Metacast. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Today's topic is XP, Scrum, Lean, and Kanban, or Kanban, depending on which way you lean, and the mixture
which
of
way
all.
You lean?
Yeah.
Josh.
That was good, wasn't
We're going to start this way, are we? Oh, no. Nicely done. So continue, Josh. I couldn't help myself.
So it's just that you can mix and match, or at least can you mix and match? Should you mix and match? What's the right way? Can you, should you only do Scrum by the book, the way whoever laid it down said it should be done, or XP, or Lean, or Kanban, or Kanban, or anything?
I actually think, well, let's put this to rest right now, Josh. I've heard from Anderson, I think, from David Anderson.
My cousin.
Your cousin, who wrote the book, literally. We're looking at the book.
He's not my cousin.
He's not your cousin?
No.
Well, you guys look alike.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
that you can pronounce a proper pronunciation is either. It is both proper, Kanban and Kanban.
Oh, good. Then we'll continue to confuse our listeners.
So we can confuse them to death, but we are being...
We are correct.
We are correct. So it's sort of a mixology.
Ooh, nice.
A mixology of agile methods, and we're going to talk about that and like shake and not stirred.
Yes.
I like these.
I'm
on fire with these analogies or these metaphors this morning. So we could have shaken, not stirred. We could have straight up. We could have on the rocks.
Nice.
Yes. There's a blog post here. I need to write this down before I forget it. So where do we want to start? We want to start in Scrum? Want to start in like sort of well-known territory and move out? So what do you think, Josh, about mixing and matching?
Well, practices? I kind of put my cards on the table with the intro that I think you can and should mix and match. I'm a firm believer in find what works for your team. There is no single process that works for every team, every project, every requirement across the board. What I get most excited about is when the team is out there and they find something that they think might be a better way. And they're willing to try it, and they're willing to take the ownership and say, hey, let's try and bring in some concepts of Lean, or Kanban, or XP. For instance, we're a mix of all four, where I'm at, which, as you know, we dabble a little bit with some of the XP principles, and we've recently gone to a pool method to bring in the Kanban, as opposed to the Scrum, of trying to be more effective and efficient with our planning.
Let's take that path, that exit ramp. So what is the pool? What is that? So when I think of a pool method, you're less planning and you're more just, you have staged work that you're just pulling into play. Is that what you're sort of talking about?
The biggest challenge that we had was that we found being restricted to always filling a 2-week bucket. We felt like we were actually losing time, productivity, all of the above, in trying to always make things fit in that one size bucket. So now whatever's next on our backlog, we pool and work on, and if it takes a week, that's all we plan for. If it takes 3 weeks, that's what we plan for. And as we finish it, we pool what's next.
So you're pulling, so that's not a story. I'm thinking of user stories. So you're pulling actually an epic or something. You're pulling something that can engage the entire team for a period of time.
Usually it's a set of stories that the team's comfortable taking on. But we had times where in planning we had X number of hours left and we didn't have a story that was small enough to fit. So we ended up almost making up things to do. And
to fill in around it.
Yeah. Or there was a story that we really wanted to get done but we couldn't do it. We didn't have enough time, so we ended up trying to short shrift some of the other stuff that we were doing to try and make that story fit. So the team got frustrated with that over a couple of years of doing that. They said, well, let's try something else. And we're off and running with it.
How's it work? How many of these things have you pulled so far? I mean, how many iterations? They're not iterations, but how many have you run?
So iterations-wise, we're about six in.
Six in?
Yeah.
What are you noticing?
I think it's working well. It's a little bit more difficult upstream to manage and track the productivity and velocity and really understand, are we doing the same, better, worse, because we don't have those nice, clean wrappers.
The time box is really, right, the constraints of velocity. I can do 20 points every 2 weeks.
Right, but to me, that's my problem, right? If the team's being more effective, efficient, and they're happy doing it,
right,
then I need to find a way around the reporting issue that management needs upstream from me on how are we doing.
Do you do a review at the end of each one of these things?
Yeah.
Do you skip a...
So what
scrum ceremonies do you... Do you like, do you have daily stand-ups? What do you wrap it with?
Yeah, so basically, we are still doing scrum. We just don't plan every 2 weeks automatically. So we still have our sprint planning. It's just... It's planning. Whatever we can fill, we fill. We still have the demos every 2 weeks. We still have retrospectives every 2 weeks, because the teams didn't want to... It was easiest to just leave those on a regular basis,
right,
just so you don't forget them, you don't stop doing them. The team thought those were really good things, but they thought, well, if we don't leave them scheduled, we aren't going to do them.
Yep.
So
that's very Kanban. I mean, and I'm not... I'm sort of light. I'll be honest with Metacasters. I'm very lightweight in Kanban. It's probably my weakest.
Yeah.
So if I'm ranking myself, I'm pretty strong in XP and pretty strong in Scrum. And that's my leanage.
Leanage.
I'm pulling them out of thin air. Everyone, Metacasters, watch out. I'm on fire. You can tell that we're slowly ramping up this morning. Again, it's 7 o'clock here in beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina. It's 7 a.m. So Josh and I are still warming up. But and then lean, I'm moderately solid with lean principles, but they're esoteric sometimes. So they're not necessarily direct tactics.
Right.
They're more, I think of them as more philosophies or thinking models that are very, very useful. And then Kanban I'm probably lightest with, but it sounds Kanban-esque to me, because I think of Kanban as being planless Scrum. So if I think of, I think that you don't plan, you just flow.
Right.
Right. I mean, you plan, but you don't plan a large chunk of work to fit the time box. You grab a team that's running Kanban would grab, when they have extra capacity, they go grab one thing.
Right.
They plan that one thing, if you will, but it's not really planning. It's just, I have to work on it, so I have to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And then they sort of swarm around executing it, and then they execute it and deliver it, and then they continue to sort of do that, right?
Right.
So they really don't have, like, large, you know, flow. There's a term of WIP, right? Work in progress limits and things like that.
Yes.
And managing your queues in Kanban. So it sounds like you're doing that. That's interesting. I would not have guessed, I mean, that evolution there. But it
was something that was brought on by the team, and the leads came to me, like, almost afraid, right? Of, we'd like to do this. Is that going to be okay? You know, are you okay with that? Can we break some Scrum rules? And they were nervous I was going to be mad at. I was, like, super excited, right? To me, the biggest thing was seeing the team recognize that they aren't being as effective and efficient as they think they could be, and they want to do something about it.
Well, when you're looking at results, I mean, I think where you would come in is, you know, give them permission, if you will, to do it. Now, if it wasn't working,
yeah,
you would come in and try to guide them or coach them.
Well, but even that, the fact that they stepped up and said, correct, this is the change that we want to make, they are going to own it. So they're going to ensure that it works, whether it works the first sprint or the first pool,
well,
or whatever.
It might fail though. I mean, it might be an idea. Yeah. And then I'm just saying, you enabled that. But as a coach, let's say their productivity dropped in half.
Right.
Would you allow? You wouldn't allow that to continue.
No, but also because they're invested, they would be less likely to allow it to fail.
Correct.
You know, so that was the real excitement that I had of, okay, so they really want to make this happen. So if they stumble a little bit,
right,
they're going to be the first ones to pick something up and change it.
Well, you've struggled, I think, with that team, with those teams sort of taking ownership of Agile,
yes,
themselves, rather than you being the initiator of, right, Agile, right, and them following.
Right.
So I get you. The fact that they grabbed anything and are just running with it is a wonderful step.
Yeah.
I'm more separating that wonderful step from the fact, you know, is it effective or,
right,
not?
Correct.
Right. And as a coach, you would continue to guide them for that. And it just so happens that they pick something that sounds like it's pretty effective.
Yeah.
Do you plan that work? Meaning, do you throw users, like, story points on that work?
Yes.
So it's pre-sized. So you know in advance, roughly, you know in advance if they grab a chunk, it's like a collection of stories, and it's 15 points worth, or next time we're going to do 25 points worth of story stuff.
Yeah, so we still do our grooming. We still go through the acceptance test-driven development process that we have of getting stories laid out with the acceptance test size and all that fun stuff, because the teams actually become comfortable and like the way that works. So it's still, it's like Scrum, we just don't do it in two-week chunks, right? That's, to me, that's the real big, big difference.
So I think of Kanban as being planless, meaning you don't, you plan along, the one thing that Scrum, not has against it, but it, you pause to plan and then you execute. Kanban is sort of planless, where you're constantly, you have a pool of work and you're pulling it in, and you're focusing on flow and getting it done rather than planning to get it done.
Right.
And then executing that. The downside to Kanban for product development, which is what you're doing, and it sounds like you're taking that burden on and figuring it out, is how do you communicate upward progress?
Yeah.
Or how do you plan? Because it's worse than, so Scrum is even challenging in that regard.
Yeah.
So Agile is not a piece of a cakewalk when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But you're now very challenged from the point of view of predicting done, like when am I going to get a set of features done, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a big challenge.
Right? I mean, are you, do you have any techniques that you're discovering to attack that? Is it just trust me organization and don't bother me?
No.
Or...
No, so Upward, we are still Scrum and we still have sprints. So I package things in, so if stuff is done in sprint 120, whether it be the last day of 120,
I got you,
or the middle of 120, then it counts as we got it done.
So you're still simulating velocity,
yeah,
and you're still simulating 2 week chunks or whatever.
Correct.
It is, right? You're still from a doneness perspective.
Yeah, because as an organization, that's how we drive it across all of our product streams in Raleigh, Toronto, West Coast. That's how everything runs. So I can't say, hey, we're Raleigh, we're doing it differently, so we're going to be measured differently, right? So to keep things consistent across the board, I do a little bit of stuffing of where things fit based on dates.
Yeah. I mean, where the Kanban, Anderson, and again, Metacasters, I know quite a bit about it, but again, I'm not nearly as expert in it, so I want to manage your expectations, so don't get too rambunctious listening to me. But Kanban, I think David Anderson originally came out of some work he did. He's from the Seattle area. I think he still lives there. And he was playing around with Corvus, a company, it was around his Microsoft. So he had done some time at Microsoft. He wrote a wonderful project management book around 2003-04 that was sort of agile, but sort of, you know, critical path, sort of goal threat related stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really not necessarily just agile. I think the title may have it in it, but it was broader agile. It was lean agile, maybe is a better way to say it. He was thinking about lean and agile probably before many, even before the Poppendix were. I think he was thinking about it. But the point is, they were using it in IT support. His case studies early on in the first 2 or 3 years of Kanban, their case studies were things like IT help desks,
right?
IT support desk, MIS, folks who are handling bugs, call centers.
Yeah.
Call center kinds of things, which is, so it's very different from product development in that you can't plan that stuff.
Right.
It's just interrupt driven. It's priority driven. The other thing he was attacking was it was these environments and their response time or their throughput was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you'd have 10 people and they were handling 2 calls a day or something like that,
right,
effectively closing 2 calls a day.
Right.
So you can actually measure what call closure rates are. So, you know, you can physically, it's not features.
Right.
They're much more discrete units of, I got a call, I help them, they're happy,
right,
or they're at least happy for now,
right,
and I can close the call, that sort of stuff. And he applied it, and I think it worked beautifully. And he had some wonderful, you know, I think increased productivity throughput numbers where they would have, you know, 200-400% improvement sort of trends, almost miraculously with Kanban. And all you did, and it would be flow. You'd never plan anything. You would expose to the team the Kanban board where they could observe their flow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was up to the team to sort of what improve their. So it wasn't up to the team to say, we want to do more. We did 2 yesterday. We're going to do 3 tomorrow. It was up to the team to just really look at what is stopping us from doing more.
Right.
And then fixing that. So I think that's the sweet spot. We at my current job, we're sort of a split shop. We use Kanban in our teams probably four of our teams that do MIS or do more interrupt-driven stuff are using Kanban. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the teams use Scrum. And I'd like to move it, like you've done, into product development, but it scares me a little bit from the planning point
of view. Yeah, it's a challenge, right, in trying to... really, to me, the biggest thing is capturing the velocity and then applying it out. Because we do have to build plans, as unagile as it may be, because of the constraints and the product that we have and everything that goes into our company, we end up having to plan essentially for 6 months in that time frame. So I need to be able to predict some consistent velocity and things like that. So it does make it a little bit tougher on me, but...
But if your throughput, your productivity is going up, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
If the team is engaging, again, it's one of those I mean, I usually debate you, right? I'm like, Josh, that's, you know, you're doing something wrong, right? Or every once in a while I debate you. But I mean, that really is a healthy risk on your part to try to go with that, as long as it's working, right?
Yeah.
And you can put up that facade. So that's sort of the Kanban. I mean, that's the common thing. Wrapping that up, I thought we were going to go to XP and Scrum, but we sort of backed into Kanban. I actually, I have a couple metrics that I measure in our Scrum teams that I borrowed from Kanban. One, and I'm not a big metrics guy in Agile. You know, you don't want to isolate a team with 2,000 metrics or KPIs.
Yeah,
I'm shuddering. I'm shuddering and tying money to every point that they produce. But we measure WIP, which is work in progress in our teams. Our Scrum Masters report on a weekly basis how many stories the team is sort of in play, and they average it. So it's a lightweight metric, but what I'm looking for is, you know, again, what is the collaboration in the team? So we measure WIP, work in progress, and then we measure throughput for the size of story. So if you have a 5-point story, you know, is it better to get it done in a day, or is it better to get it done in 10 days in a 2-week sprint? And you could probably go both ways on that, right? And I'm giving you a silly example. So for throughput for us is, to me, it would be a highly encouraging metric if I get that done in a day. Or what is the throughput from start to finish of stories as it goes through the machine? And we have some algorithms around that. Not algorithms, but I have some story mix targets, and we measure colors. We assign colors to that. So, we'll have green whip. So green whip for us is, I think, 3. So if
three what?
3 stories.
Okay.
So if a team maintains 3 stories in a week period, they're sort of, that's a healthy. Right. 4, they're getting yellow. 5, five, they're red. Don't get caught up in my Metacasters, please. Don't get caught up in my colors. And Josh, don't hit me. You get to the spirit of what I'm saying. Josh, he's giving me the evil eye. I may not survive. So, and then we do the same thing with throughput. And I'm not measuring to reward. We don't reward with the metric. We show the team the metric.
Yeah.
Right? This is where your whip is. Can you improve it? So getting to green says, if you're red, that says you have a lot of stories in play.
Right.
And what does that say to team? So fewer people, so smaller groups of people are working on, you know, stories. Yep. There's less collaboration. The stories are in play for throughput. Stories are in play for longer periods of time.
Right.
They can clash at the end of the time.
Okay, so throughput is just average length of delivery.
Of not average length, it's relative to the size. That's where the algorithm, the size of the story. So how quickly you get a 10-point story done. You can't get it done. It's probably not feasible to get it done in a day.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. So, and it's artificial. What I'm trying to do is sort of goose the team into thinking about, but again, it's Kanban-esque. It's lean-esque.
Yeah.
Trying to goose the team into thinking about what? Like collaboration.
Right.
What would be an anti-pattern? 10 people on a team, 10 stories. Yeah. Everyone grabs one story. They go off, they sit down, and they're working really hard on their story. I'm trying to avoid those sort of the anti-cluster patterns, right? I want teams to cluster, but I don't want to tell them. I don't want them to be artificial about it.
So why haven't you just put a work in progress limit at 3?
I've tried. It's the same reason that you're, I think, showing flexibility.
Okay.
Why haven't you? Why haven't you, put a different time box around that team or something? You know, you want to... You want to provide guidance.
Okay. So it was something where the team said, we think this will work. Let's try this.
No. No, this was introduced. So this is different. You had an immersion from the team. This is me coming down as a coach saying, I want to give you a dashboard. So this would be, I'm adding a burnout chart.
Right.
So what am I telling the team to do? I'm not telling them to change. I'm telling them to look at the burnout chart.
Right.
And be cognizant of your behavior.
Right.
I'm just giving them another dashboard element, on their dashboard, on their, you know, if they're driving their car.
You're hoping that they end up.
And I'm hoping and praying.
That they self-impose a limit of three.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Well, the goal is not three every sprint. The goal is keep it low.
Right. Yeah.
Relative to the work. There are some teams, for example, who are doing Scrum that are doing small. We have some teams in between Kanban and Scrum that are having smaller units of work, mm-hmm. like bug fixes and things. And those teams have higher WIP limits. They naturally go to a slightly higher WIP. And I don't really say a word to them about it. I just want them to be cognizant of keeping the WIP down. It really is the Scrum Masters.
Right.
I give it, you know, just like in a burndown chart, the Scrum Masters are pointing it out.
Right.
But I've borrowed those two things. It's helped our collaboration, and it's helped our throughput, I think, quite a bit. Not quite, you know, but maybe 20-30%.
Right.
It's helped our consistency too. We had a tendency, the mumbly pegs would, you know, we'd be in play and then things would crash. We had a strong tendency of, you know, those cliff burndown charts.
Yeah.
We had a strong tendency even to this day, without some of these limits and thinking about it, of crashing into the end of our time boxes. That's one of those things that in your case, you don't crash. You just get it done.
Yeah.
So, in all seriousness, so how do you, now that I'm thinking, now that I'm thinking about it, so if the team says, for this unit of work, we need 3 weeks, and it creeps into 4 weeks, you would just naturally say it's 4 weeks, right?
Reluctantly. Yeah,
I'm not picking, but I am thinking of a counterpoint. So the beauty of the time box is that rallying point of doneness, rallying point of, you know, earned value. You're either, you're 0% done and you're, you know, you there's no partial credit.
Right.
You crash.
Right.
You have no crashes, do you?
We do have crashes. I mean, it certainly was a lot more transparent to the team that every miss affects the plan, and now it's harder to define a miss, right? Because we aren't saying we are doing this by this date, and when that date comes, we deliver or we don't.
But right? You don't define the time box.
Right, exactly. We don't put a hard limit on that. But
so we commit to, so you could vary the time box, so the team could come back, and they say, this body of work is going to be 2 weeks and 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you put a snap a line, that's our time box for this unit of work.
We do not do that.
Okay.
Right. Because I'm expecting as we evolve through that maybe there's a change or there's some story that comes in or there's something that happens. We're oscillating a lot on a lot of different things right now. Where change is quite high.
But that's dangerous, what you're just describing now.
It is.
You know, I'm like...
I'm rolling the dice, my friend.
I'm turning from a dove to like a wolf here a little bit. I can feel myself changing as you speak. But that is... No, but from a behavior perspective. So I saw the goodness in it. And this doesn't subtract... There is goodness in that approach. But like anything in life, there is also these things you have to manage. So there is that behavioral thing of you don't have crisp doneness. You have a get out of jail free card at the end sometimes that the team could leverage, right? You have to be careful about how you gain commitment to those time box goals.
So what I've done...
And failure. You would never fail.
Correct. What I've done to challenge that or to prevent that challenge with the team is every team now has a release burn down of this is our expected velocity of getting things done. So they only get credit when things are done. So they have a greater visibility into playing their part within the overall release. So they can more directly tie their productivity to the success of the project. Because before we had a single burn down for a release, it was difficult for teams to understand hits and misses and how it affected everything. And now they they help me plan out the release burn down and when things are going to be done, and help me manage upstream of how we're going to do that. So I've tried to tackle that with added transparency and involvement to the release process.
The release commitment. So you're saying, you know, more transparency and commitment to the release goals.
Because before, right, they had no... I said, you worry about 2 weeks.
Okay, I got you.
So
you were abstracting them from release commitment.
Yeah. And before, the way I explained it was, it's like football. You keep getting first downs and worry about getting first downs, and we'll score eventually. Yeah. Don't worry about trying to throw the long bomb and score a touchdown. Let's get first down, we score. Now, I'm stepping back. Okay, so we're on the 50-yard line, right? And that's about where we're supposed to be. How are we going to keep this train rolling? So I've exposed them to a lot more, which can be dangerous and difficult, but I think it helps the team understand how everything fits together a bit better.
I like the evolution there. I mean, and again, and there's trade-offs. I think that's... I'm not nitpicking. There's trade-offs in what you're doing. There's downside trade-offs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lot of distraction gets in the way now.
But I think that's really interesting, the way that's evolving there. And it's not unguided. You're helping guide it, right? So that they're also they're sort of contributing to that. That's very interesting. I like that evolution. But it wasn't as pure originally when I was listening to it. I'm like, holy crap!
Yeah,
I wanted to walk out of here and do it immediately. Right? I'm like, yeah, let's go. Somehow I'm going to wave my magic wand back at the ranch and try to do that immediately. Like, I'm like, oh crap! Yeah. There's a new silver bullet in town.
Yeah.
So.
But it's clearly not a silver bullet.
No, not at all. Why don't we switch gears? That was a good discussion around Kanban sort of practices. I do want to bring up one other point in Kanban that I think I'm learning that David Anderson emphasizes, and one of the neat things about it. And Kanban sort of, it doesn't de-emphasize the coach, but the board in Kanban is different. It's activities, not, you know. So the traditional Scrum board is work to do, work in progress. You might have testing or not. And then done. If everyone's familiar with that sort of that swim lane version of sprint management, and then in Kanban, it's more activities. Like I have a working. I'm doing requirements analysis. I'm doing architecture. Let's call it. So I have a swim lane board for requirements analysis for software. Then design and architecture. Then I have coding. Then I have, you know, testing. And then I have documentation and finalization. Whatever the real steps of, and I'm not trying to sound waterfall, but whatever the activities are, the technical activities, when you might have a transition from one person to another,
right,
you have transitions there. Each one has a queue. So each transition, so for example, coding would have a queue of three,
mm-hmm,
that would say that you don't exceed, you know, so work in progress isn't just across the team. So I'm sort of bastardizing Kanban a little bit,
right,
because I'm doing team-based WIP. But what Kanban is really doing is there's cues at each phase. So in this Kanban, you have this WIP per column. It's up to the team then to be observing. They're looking at the output side, and they're saying, what can we do? What can we do to improve throughput? So instead of coaching, there's a strong emphasis on the team is evolving their processes from what? From their actual throughput. And that's a unique difference, I'm starting to think. That instead of having coaches hover and tell, you know what I'm saying? And the topic of this metacast is, you know, can you mix and match? Really, I think Kanban, one of the drivers of Kanban, not only can you mix and match, it's not even about mixing and matching. It's about what? Creating a process that driving it up from your team that matches your level of difficulty or your activity. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So each Kanban team, we've talked a good game about it being unique per team,
mm-hmm,
but Scrum teams aren't unique. They right. They have these characteristics. I think the Kanban teams eventually will become quite unique, and it's all team driven.
Right.
Now again, I think there's coaching. I think there's expertise required to guide the teams in that
right.
direction. But it's very different. So like the change curve is different. Instead of having guys like you and I come in, with a Scrum class, what the Kanbanners do is they just try to get Kanban up and running, and then step back. And then you try to just poke the team to say, "Are you paying attention? Are you changing?"
Right.
But it's a very from a change from a cultural change perspective, It's very different from all of the other Agile methods, because it's not, oh, you have to have certified Scrum Master training, right? It's not that at all. It's get the Kanban board up, craft swim lanes that match your environment, craft WIP that matches what sort of, just get a start, and then see how the team, and then let the team sort of go, which is very different. I wanted to sort of bring that, reactions to that.
So
what do you think?
I view those as very similar, and one of the reasons I'm very comfortable with our move to Kanban is that the essence of continuous improvement and always retrospecting and saying how can we get this better, how can we do better, how can we do not more, how can we do better, I guess is the right thing to say. So to me, it was a logical progression of we're still doing Scrum, we're still embracing all of the tenets, the manifesto, all of that stuff of what works for us. And if it's slightly different than what we laid down 3 years ago, so be it. But we're moving in the right direction.
Yep. Well, it's this team-based customization based on value and output and throughput and quality and all of those things, right? But getting it to the customer. And sometimes the ceremonies, maybe this backs into Scrum nicely. Maybe there's a method to my madness, right? But sometimes the ceremonies get too restrictive.
Yeah.
They get in the way of this sort of natural evolution that you want. You want to foster this team-based natural evolution, not coach-based.
Right.
Where the team is sort of reacting and looking at the speedometer and seeing what's going on and then changing the characteristics of how they're driving the car, right? Just very naturally. And I don't see that. I do see the restrictiveness of XP, the more traditional Agile methods that are more restricted to that level of team-based change, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw that. The team probably had this idea 6 months before they brought it. I'm exaggerating.
No, that's relatively accurate. There had been some grumbling of we aren't comfortable with how things are going.
Right.
So the biggest thing that I've said, okay, great. So what are we going to do about it?
Yep.
Don't just complain, right? Come up with a plan. So there was this murmur of activity. It was about 4 months long where the team basically assembled a plan of this is how we think we can make life better. And they said, here it is, and off we go.
Now, I do think switching gears and getting away from Kanban, because it sounds like we're sort of, at least I feel like I'm sort of, devaluing, Scrum and devaluing XP. I think if you have a brand new team, I want to bring in this brand new team. I think having guidelines, having ceremonies, having a framework isn't the worst thing you could do to them of saying, we're going to be Scrum for the next 3 months.
Right.
You've never done it before. We're going to be Scrum. And this talks about mixing and matching. I'd like to get your reaction to it, but one of my concerns about mixing and matching, just cherry, it's a menu. So Scrum is a menu on a card, and you just come in and you pick whatever the heck you want. And then the next day you're scrumming. I actually look at I like to be a little bit more restrictive in the menu selection in a brand new team.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So I think that's almost required to get people up and running. People during a change will assimilate to structure better than figure it out, right? People want direction. People want to know that, okay, as I'm figuring this out, I know I need to do this, then this, then this, then this. But as you figure it out, you're going to figure out that maybe there's a better fit, right? So I think absolutely the right way to start is with the ceremonies and get that rolling.
The time boxes, they give you behavior of there is a period where you drive to done.
Right.
You plan for that. The notion of doneness criteria. I'd hate to see a team that said we're not going to do anything around defining doneness or driving to doneness. I think that would be a real fault for them. Retrospectives.
Right.
I'd hate to see a team that would take retrospectives off their menu and say, we're not going to reflect.
Right. So it almost forces the team to foster those good behaviors, right, by reminding them that, hey, you need to do this every 2 weeks or whatever the right time is. And then teams develop a rhythm and they fit it however works for them.
I've actually seen the not the counterpoint, but I've seen teams, and in my teaching, I'm finding that I'm being too willy-nilly. So for new teams, I go in, I give them the Scrum XP lean overview, and I leave, and I've set the tone where I almost allow them too much flexibility.
Right.
And they pick the menu, and they pick it poorly. And then I'll go back. I did an assessment of a team not that long ago and I had done training, and they were happy, and they were smiling, and they had a backlog, and we goosed them into their first sprint, and then I walked, you know, I rode off into the sunset as a coach, and they never called, you know, they never called me back, so I assumed, you know, I'm not pushing, so they didn't pull me back in, and I think 4 or 5 months later, 6 months later, I was sort of emailing with the VP of the department, and then we really synced up, and it turned out that she brought me back in for just a quick snapshot, and she thought they were having problems, and they right. were, and from Jump Street. So from the very beginning, they had picked poorly, almost with their first sprint. They had, I think they had failed of 15 sprints, they had failed 14 or 13, and I was like, why aren't they?
Yeah.
I said, you should have called.
Right.
Not that I'm the savior, but it's like, you know, and they picked poorly. Just I'm not gonna identify the areas that they picked poorly, because it would be unfair to them, but they only picked poorly in a couple of key areas. One I will disclose. It was leadership. You know, the trust factor. We've had a metacast around trust. So they blew trust. They blew the relationship between leadership and the scrum team.
Right.
And it was driving the behavior. It sort of took the behavior. Then the team started padding estimates and things. So they blew that trust or that understanding, that dynamic between leadership around the team, traditional leadership or whatever leadership, and the team. And it had disastrous effects on their scrumness, their agileness, and they just picked poorly.
So it goes back to the guardrails, which you're always very strong on whenever you're starting a team, of getting those in place to really help the team get rolling without concern about going off track too much, right? So I think that's a key with getting started.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Scrum is a great starter. I'll just go out there. I may get crucified in the Metacast community, but I think Scrum is a great starter, and it's a great, you know, it's a great wrapper. You can get your head around it. I think the XP practices ought to be brought in early as well, probably as part of the start. Some of them, like stories, are really healthy, and unit tests are, you know, not getting crazy about it, but the notion of refactoring, the notion of test-driven development are great notions to start with if you're going to be adopting. If you're going to go through change, then I think go through an initial change, a healthy change. But then where Kanban gets intriguing, or where, in your case, you didn't even do Kanban, but where you start evolving, right? Opening the guardrails up.
Yeah.
I think then you want to do that relatively quickly, right? You don't want to be constricted by your scrum. You actually want to encourage the team to do that. And then I think the menus, then I still think, you know, then things change. Like, would you ever allow a team not to reflect? Probably not.
Yeah.
So there are always going to be guardrails, right? Like I would never, you know, you pause there, like, oh, I would never pause. I would be like, you know, no, I'm not going to drop, you know, the menu. So you get a glass of water, right? You will,
right?
We will.
You get water, you get bread, you get butter.
Yeah, that's all you get. So we will have a reflection at the end of some, you know, we will have periodic reflections for inspect and adapt and improvement. Come on. Now, what might vary is the frequency. What might vary is this: we can do it in trees. We can go down to the Bahamas to do it. The locale can change. You know,
that's a good plan.
The facilitation can change, but so that everything can change, but that you will do it won't change, right? You don't have an option to do certain things.
And I think the guardrails are very much like the information radiators in that they foster everything that you want the team to be doing, and then as the team gets in the groove and it becomes a part of their nature of this is how we operate, that's when I think you can start to think about loosening the guardrails and letting the team wander a little bit wider and trying to find a more balanced way to deliver consistently.
Now, let me disagree with myself just for a second.
This is great.
Yeah, I'm just going to come back to myself and slap myself. So what I just said, I'm relating it back to the Kanban discussion we had earlier on. I was wrong about reflection. If the team is reflecting continuously via Kanban, via making real-time adjustments all the time, so that they're always looking at the biggest impediment, if you will, and resolving it, then you don't need. Then who cares about?
Right.
They don't need a period.
But they're still doing it, right? They're doing it.
But they're doing it continuously, right? So I don't think so. Even then, I think these major events, like a retrospective, as long as the team is reflecting in and effectively reflecting in real time, mm-hmm. then I was wrong. You know, Kanban, and I can see that. I could see stopping it. There's no, you're stopping the planning meeting in Kanban for, right. for that matter. There is, you really don't need to plan. You can, what they're doing is continuously planning. So if you evolve in that way, and I think maturity.
Right.
It, we've done a talk on Shuhari.
Yeah.
Right. So the Shuhari dovetails quite nicely, I think, on top of all the stuff that we're talking about, and just being careful about what you pick. Lean thinking, we didn't touch on it. Or lean. How does lean? I struggle with mapping lean in sometimes.
Yeah. So I try and map lean to the retrospective and trying to find ways to reduce and improve through the reduction. Right. So that's kind of how I squeeze it into what we do of let's think lean. I don't say we are doing lean or we are doing this, but let's think and let's try to be as lean as possible. What are we doing that we don't need to do? Right. So that's how I push it. I don't know that there is a specific process around it. I think there is, but I haven't tried to wrap it around anything.
I don't think it's a methodology. I mean, I think that the best tactical thing, and again, I'm not the world's greatest expert on lean. So some folks who are, is the Poppendicks. Tom and Mary have written, I think, 3 books on lean and software. Alan Shalloway of Net Objectives, he's in the Northwest. So the company is Net Objectives. Alan Shalloway is a real student of lean, and I think he's written a book or is writing a book on it. David Anderson, so Kanban is very tightly coupled, even more tightly coupled to lean than I think XP and Scrum are.
Mm-hmm.
From the very discussion we had of continuous, making it flow.
Right.
So what do I pull out of lean? Value stream mapping is a technique. If you've ever done value stream mapping, something you've taught if you go to lean, the Poppendicks teach that. And what you try to do is you try to map an existing process, like how does a feature flow through your system? And if you look, you would identify, you know, bottlenecks like sign off. Oh, it took 3 days.
Right.
You know, why is there a 5-day pause here? Well, we need sign off or something like that. So then that gives you an indication of my flow is 28 days to get just a one line of code or a bug fix. So a value stream map of a bug fix. When a bug gets notified to when does it actually get modified out?
Right.
How many days is that? And then map the steps. Map the, not only map the activities, but map the delays. So what would be a delay? A handoff, a sign-off, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the things you focus on is to reduce what? Reduce the time.
Right.
So you can look at, but it'll help you identify those places. Like if bugs accumulate, if for some reason you have a process that says, well, we don't want to do one individual bug fixes because we can't. We have to package them all up for 30 days and then flush them out the tube. So the first bug has that 30-day delay. It's just sitting in a queue. So that's the worst case
right. For
that bug. So if you wanted, all you have to do is look at the systems. Why is that delay there? And if you have the software that actually allows you to push it, why not push it?
Right.
So you could increase your flow that way. So value stream mapping is I think the most tactical technique out of the lean community. The other stuff to me are thinking models like just in time,
mm-hmm.
just enough, waste. So the value stream mapping is going to identify waste, mm-hmm. right, for you, like delays and things like that. So waste thinking is part of it. You know, what would be another waste? Bugs are waste. Why do we scramble around trying to find early detection
right. And
not allow them to escape? It's sort of software waste elements and stuff. But I find it useful. I think it's just enough, just in time. There's an honor the team aspect, so empower the team aspect to
right. Lean
that really dovetail quite nicely with what's going on. Anderson is talking about, I think the Poppendicks early on focused too much on waste. So I'll just bring this up. There's discussion in the Lean Kanban community where 5 years ago, it was like, get rid of waste, get rid of waste, get rid of waste.
Mm-hmm.
And he's starting, not recently, but not just last week, for the last couple of years, the leaners have been trying to change the focus to, I think, value rather than and flow and workflow and output from and it's sort of
kind of the same thing.
It's kind of the same thing, but we got caught up on, we thought the waste, you know, your work is done. It's a dangerous it's a dangerous mindset when you look at a little box in a value stream map, and you if you get rid of it, you're like, oh, my work here is done.
Right, I got you.
And I've eradicated waste. It was the wrong. It is the same thing, and it is relevant. But but your focus is not on waste reduction. Your focus is on what value and customer, and things like that.
And often reducing waste will increase that.
Yeah.
But it's just marrying the two together.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
There's something from that community too, from the Kanban community. They talk about something called a minimal marketable feature, or an MMF. No smart responses at all. But a minimal.
They were queuing up.
Yeah. So. But it sounds like that's what I'm bringing it back to what you guys are doing. It sounds like your chunks are these minimal marketable features that you're working on, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So you've sort of backed into a real true essence of Kanban, maybe without even knowing it.
Yep, that happens often.
Did we cover this topic, Josh? Do you think
we did?
Do you feel? I don't know if we skipped much.
I think we skipped a little bit of the crossover between Scrum and XP, but I think we've hit that in previous discussions.
I think XP is an outlier. I think XP is a menu. I think Scrum menu selection is a little harder from a guardrails perspective. I think XP just gives you a toolbox.
Yeah.
I think wise people would pick tools from that toolbox and have them in their belt. Otherwise, you have empty belt loops, and you don't have a lot of tools. So, I think it's more, you know, these practical. So, what did I just say? In Lean, the only tool I could think of from Lean to actually can to a team, other than a thinking model or philosophy, was value stream mapping.
Right.
And I think that's true.
Whereas XP is the opposite.
XP is the opposite. Here's a whole set of tools that have very deep implications to development and to testing, right? And support the philosophies of the Agile methods. But they're tools, they're tactical tools. So I think they're slightly different in that way. And so, I mean, valuable, but slightly different.
Right.
So I think you should pick as many as you can, and sort of, you know, I think pick them along the way.
Yeah.
Right? So pick them up when you can. Pick as many as you can. User stories would be one that I would recommend early. Right? So if I was cherry picking one, because of the requirement aspects of it, I think that would be a healthy early start. But again, you can pick it up later.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yes, sir.
So, Metacasters, want to thank you for listening this morning. We're talking about we made a few drinks, I hope. I think this was, I don't know, this could have been like daiquiris and margaritas. I think this was like mixy, foamy drinks rather than like a straight up.
Yeah.
This didn't feel straight up to me, Josh. This didn't feel like, you know, vodka on the rocks. This felt like frothy, fruity drinks with little umbrellas or something, which aren't bad, right?
No, they're tasty.
They're very tasty, and you drink lots of them. It's not bad. But I think we mixed up a few cocktails this morning, and I think we're done. So I want to thank you. Where can folks find us, Josh?
They can find us at metacast.com. That's meta-cast.com, or on Twitter at meta-cast, all spelled out once again, because Twitter does not like non-alphanumeric characters in their names. So please reach out to us, leave a comment on the blog, send us a note on Twitter, anything.
Let us know what's useful. Let us know the talks are useful. Give us some direction on what you want to hear about or what not. You have a feeling for our style. Go back and listen to past Metacasts. There's a method to our madness.
There is.
And look for gaps that we haven't covered, or if you want to redux on something that we've talked about and you want to challenge us, I think Josh and I are continuously thinking and rethinking about what works and what doesn't. I mean, I disagree with myself in this Metacast, for God's sake. So give us your feedback. We'd love it. And from beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina, shake.
And bake.
Hey, take care, y'all.
Oh, y'all comes back.